This episode of the Jury Podcast is brought to you by you! Seriously.
But that's fine. Cause you're pretty ugly by most people's standards. But you're all right by mine.
And it is that backhanded sense of love and acceptance that brings you here today. Dear friends, countrymen, lend me your ears for this. Quite possibly the most important episode of Justin Robert Young, the podcast that we have ever done. Why is it so important, you might ask? It is because we have finally breached the wall. We are over 2014. File that bad bitch under old and busted, because the new hotness is 2015. We are all up in its mug currently. My name is Justin Robert Young. It's not a pseudonym. It's not a nom de plume. It's my good goddamn given name, government and Christian. And I am here to let you know that you make me here. Now, that might sound like gibberish put together by some sort of old minstrel who's down on his luck and looking to fool a young boy so he can grab a few shekels out of his denim tunic. Well, that would be a really weird way to describe something. However, it is indicative of what this show, or at least the first segment, is going to be about. And that's, I got a fucking Patreon. Oh, wait a minute. Every time I used to do this show, I used to start things off by saying, this episode is brought to you by absolutely nobody. And it was. It was. But now, things are a little different. Yeah. We're dancing to a bit of a different tune. I started a Patreon. You can go to patreon.com/jury, if you would like to support this show. And really, man, I mean, your support means a lot. I said it in the video that's up there on the page, but let me just tell you guys, again, how much you guys have meant to this show. I mean, this show kind of started out as me wanting to do a one mic show and wanting to sort of talk and get good at talking. It became a show that I wanted to ask for money for, and I want to invest more time in, because you guys are here listening, and there is no greater example of listeners stepping up to the plate and bringing their own uncomfortable yet important stories to be discussed on this show than something that you will see later today. On this episode, we will have something just amazingly awesome. And by awesome, I mean, I can't believe somebody wants to talk about this kind of stuff with me. It's personal, really personal. But let's get into what the Patreon is going to be, because I held off on doing a Patreon for a very long time. Because I didn't know what I wanted to do, basically. I didn't know how I wanted a Patreon to kind of affect the show. So here's basically what we're doing. Normally, people are like, well, you know, I need a Patreon to justify my time. I need a Patreon to buy new equipment. you know, I like doing this. So it's not really necessarily a time thing for what it is right now. And the equipment, although anybody's watching this stuttering-ass video will be able to tell you that I should be able to come up with a better solution for video. And I certainly can. And I will. And the money that will go to that will help. But it's not huge. It's not pressing. Like, I don't need to start a Patreon for that. I can just probably pony up the cash out of my own budget. Here's what I do need money for. And this is something that I don't even know if y'all want. So it's going to be up to you. Like, I could ask the chat room right now, and I'm sure they'd probably say yes to it. I could throw it up in a straw poll .me and ask you guys, and it would probably beat Pol Pot, the perennial favorite for all straw polls. However, I feel like this is something that is so important. I need the listeners of this show to vote with their wallets, and not now. It's not like a fucking immediate thing, but it is something that, like, as we go along, as new people get into this show, and as we continue to evolve as a community, if people want it, then it will be there. And here's what the option is. If we hit $500 an episode, I will add a new hangout. I forget what I called it. I think it was like some weird thing. But basically, we'll do a hangout where we'll just have a less formal conversation with anybody who wants to be there that chips into the Patreon. So there's that. That's fairly standard. Here's where things get interesting. If we hit $1,000 per week, an important distinction, not per episode, per week. If we hit $1,000 per week, this show goes from once weekly to twice weekly. We double our shows. So now, and this is the fucking bargain, baby, now you thought you were paying $1,000 for a show? Mm-mm. $1,000 for two shows, $500 a show. And then there's this. There's the big kahuna. And if I'm going to be a betting man, I'm going to lay long odds on this one. I don't think it's going to happen. But again, it's up to you guys. If you guys would like to do it, if you guys want to do it, $2,000 effectively makes this my full-time job. I will do 4 jury episodes a week. It becomes your new daily show. It becomes a thing that you can have every single day. Now, that's going to mean a lot more pop culture, a lot more current events. I'm going to need you guys a lot more. And really, it turns the jury show into a major undertaking. I have no idea where I will find the time for it. But if we have $2,000 a week coming in, then now all of a sudden it is absolutely what I can carve out time for. So that's the big thing. Right now I have really talked nothing about this at all. I uploaded the video, I pushed the page live, and the YouTube auto push to my Twitter, which I really need to turn off. But other than that, I haven't talked about it on Twitter. I haven't retweeted people saying that they were supporting me. I've just favorited it. This is where it kind of officially begins. In just kind of pre-returns, we've gotten up to over 100 an episode, which I think is pretty promising and pretty rad. So we'll see, man. I mean, whatever you guys want to do, whatever you guys want to make this, if you want more jury show, then this is going to be the way to do it. And for those of you asking, if we go to 4 episodes a week, it will always remain what it is per week.
So it's like, we're not going to get to $2,000 and then do four episodes at $2,000 a piece. Like, that's not going to happen. Anything that you pledge will forever be by the week as opposed to by anything else. And so people are saying, Igloo, I'll be happy if it gets to 500. Fuck, I mean, Jesus, Herbert, Christ, that would be a fucking amazing if it got to 500. That would be shocking. That would be mind-blowing to me if we got to 500. And in fact, 500 is a key number. Because even at the highest goal, I'm not taking it away from $500 an episode ever. I'm just going to keep adding more episodes. So there we go. That is the jury Patreon pitch. Somebody asked, Wabbit Magic says, how much to leave the Go game? I don't want to make this a, like, well, if you free me from my gilded cage kind of thing. Like, I don't want to tie the two together, because I think that there's ultimately a way to do everything, and I don't do well with free time. I tend to just sit on my butt and read my iPhone, and I think keeping busy is a better way for me to go about my life. So this isn't about whether or not I leave the Go game or not. This is about whether or not y'all like this show. And if you like this show, I'm going to do more of it. If you are just happy with where the show is, then that's totally fine. It's always going to be free. Really, you know, this is just a way for you guys. If you'd like to do it, then now you can. Patreon.com/JURY. That is where you can go to take care of this. We got a ton of stuff, man. I'll tell you, I'm in a bit of a funk here during the show. I think I got a lot of angst I want to work out right now. We're going to get back into politics talk, folks. We have not had a whole lot of politics talk, but it's 2015, which means that the 2016 election cycle is, it is creeping upon us. And I'm so excited. We're going to do a real quick primer on that. And I have more to talk about cereal. That all comes up on this version of The Jury Show. Chemical Brothers. I mean, I'll tell you how it motherfucking feels. It feels stressful. That's what I feel. I would like to express what I feel right now. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I have not felt this particular emotion since I was a boy, since I was a child, growing up. In the wilds of South Florida, I've not felt this feeling. It is nerves. It is anxiety. It is excitement. It is dread. It is taking in a cocktail, shake that motherfucker up, crack the side, pour it into two glasses of who gives a shit, because that's what I'm feeling right now. And it feels like my first day of school. It feels like I am about to go back to school, that I just need to do it. That's what the deal is. That's what society has laid out for me. It is what's best for me, and I'm going to do it. Monday, I leave the California for the first time in 2 weeks. And head out to Charlotte, another trip to my first trip to the East Coast. And, you know, it's, I really don't know. I mean, do you guys, please tell me that there are other people that have this affliction. Because it can't just be me. Because I had a really busy 2014, and the end of 2014 was super busy too, leading up to like the first half of December. And then I get done with all my work stuff, and it's like, congratulations, I got 2 weeks off. And I'm like, woohoo! Let's fucking party. Except for the fact that I got to get back into a plane, and I got to go out to Ohio to do family with Ashley, which is something that I want to do. I was excited to do. I had a great time out there, but it's also not exactly... you know, it's not exactly relaxing, huh? Right? Not exactly, you know, it's just, and now, we're back, you know, we're done with the, like, oh, here's the relaxing part of the winter. That's not happening anymore. Now it is just all fucking, like go time again. We're launched. We're back in the cannon. We're about to get fired out. And it's not the work. It's not the fact that it exists. It's not that I'm complaining. It's just what it is. It's just that feeling of getting ready to do stuff. Now, there is the other end of this, which is that prior to getting anything of worth done, there is that sense of like, I guess I got to get to work. So like, I hope this is the beginning of great amounts of productivity. That this is me resigning my bullshit so I can get some major shit done. And I'm in a positive frame of mind for that. And this is just myself girding my brain and trying to beat out any like, oh, well, like, I guess I'll just fuck around, ideas out of my head. But it is just a tilt-a-whirl up there. Like, it's odd for whatever reason. Like, I guess maybe this is just a big year, you know, maybe this is just because I'm getting married and this is because, you know, now the podcasts are like bearing fruit and like all my friends are like making money and I'm making more money than I ever have, like doing a bunch of stuff. And a lot of it's for my art. A lot of it's for connecting to people. And I've made a lot of decisions on big, fun projects that I want to do in the coming year. And I hope it's that. God damn it. Do I hope that it is just me getting ready to do big shit? Because if it's just me taking a fat shit on my life, it'll be really frustrating if I'm getting very anxiety-ridden about myself, only to kind of do nothing. All right, we're going to do politics, and then we get into me bitching about cereal right after this.
To a party, I danced all night. I drank 16 beers, started up a fight. But now I'm jaded. You're out of luck. I'm rolling down the stairs to drop to fuck.
It's been so long since I played this drop. It's been so long since I've played this drop. Here we go!
Politics, 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 politics. Yes.
We are ready for the new presidential season. Get that midterm shit up out my face, motherfucker. Get it out. I don't want to deal with midterms. I don't want to deal with fucking Congress. I'm here for the heavyweights. I'm here for the big boys. I'm here for the motherfucking 2016 presidential elections. Makes you motherfucking want to say, And we got some, this is a good one. There is no greater presidential election than when you have both parties going through a primary. Incumbents, get that the fuck out of here, right? I don't want to deal with incumbents. I want a free-for-all on both motherfucking sides, and that's what we got this time. So let's first go ahead and look at the Democrats. Here's your big fight. Your big fight in the primaries is going to be, at least if you were to make it now, if you were to sketch it out now, would be Hillary Clinton versus Elizabeth Warren. Let's hear it for the ladies. Two women are going to claw each other's face off for their party's nomination. And for Hillary, here's the narrative. You already kind of went out there once being the inevitable candidate and took a big fat shit on the stage. Meanwhile, Barack Obama picked up that shit, ran it into the end zone, spiked it, and did a touchdown dance for 8 solid years. All up in your mouth. That's what that dude did. Okay? So we can understand that you just had to understand that you got R-E-K-T wrecked in 2008. So now you figure, okay, she had a good 8 years in between. She was Secretary of State. I mean, like, you know, aside from the Benghazi shit or whatever, like, by and large, people have a good thought of her as Secretary of State. So now, who do you have against you? Elizabeth Warren. And now you have to wonder, wait a minute, everybody seems really excited about falling in love with Elizabeth Warren. How much of this is the fact that people love Elizabeth Warren, and how much of it is people on the Democratic primary voting block being kind of done with Hillary? I think Apex in the chat room says she's Republican light, tastes great, less filling. I think that there is just an element, and we're going to hear this more and more, that Hillary Clinton might just be unelectable because she's too defined. What does defined mean? Defined means that we know what she's going to do. And now if she does something other than that, it rings false. And it's hard to get excited, right? Even if you're a real big, if you're a super Democrat fan, like, it's hard to get excited about a Hillary presidency, especially when she's running against another woman, so you can still, on the other end, have the first woman president thing. She's not going to be the only one monopolizing that this time. There's going to be somebody with a more liberal record than her running as a woman. I mean, like, she had a choice. She's not a fucking animagus, right? She ain't going to run it as an owl. So let's go ahead and flip it on over to the other side, the GOP, where my... Oh, this is so exciting. I don't even know how to say it. I really... Oh, my God. I don't know how I can express how excited I am for the following possibility. All right. And beyond politics, right? Like, fucking, if you're not a fan of Republicans or conservatives or whatever, like, just understand this on a conceptual level. We might have two fat guys be the last two people for that nomination running against each other. Two fat guys. And I don't mean kind of chubby. I don't mean Al Gore kind of stocky. I'm talking about fat boys. Fat motherfucking boys running for the president of the United States. Fucking, can you imagine these motherfuckers once they start stress eating? Oh, they're gonna balloon. It's gonna be the best. Chris Christie and Jeb Bush. Now, you'd always heard If they start losing weight, then they're definitely going to run. But both of these motherfuckers look like they're definitely going to run, and either of them are losing any noticeable amount of weight. And it makes me so happy. It makes me so happy that we might see somebody being very fat being taken seriously on a political stage, on a major national political stage. Fat guy 2016, says FLS Carnage. Igloo says Christie is amazingly fat. I didn't know Jeb was that fat. That motherfucker is that fat, and he doesn't have a bad record, right? The only problem is that he's been out of the game for a fucking really long time. Here's how fucking out of the game Jeb Bush is. The dude who replaced Jeb Bush from his own party is now in the other party. That dude ran two terms as the governor and then fucking switched to the other party and lost running again for governor. That dude has been out for a minute. It has been a fucking really, 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 really long time. But even then, two fat guys running for the presidency. But it could even be better. Oh, no, Justin. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, no, it couldn't be better than that. Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Hold on, wait a minute. There's somebody who has, ladies and gentlemen, calling in right now from parts unknown, beyond the grave. This is a Paul Bearer. Paul, can it get better than two fat guys running for president? How could it get better? How could it get better than two fat guys running for office? Three fat guys running for office on the GOP ticket. If Mike Huckabee runs, if Mike Huckabee, Jeb Bush, and Chris Christie are the final three people in the running for the GOP nomination, they should announce them like a fucking tag team. Had a combined weight of 947 pounds. It is your Republican primary finalists. And then they fucking come out to the natural disasters music. And Jeb Bush is wearing fucking earthquake singlet. And Chris Christie is wearing typhoons. And Mike Huckabee is dressed up like Paul Bearer with his fucking face all fucking cake makeup out. I am so fucking pleased by this. They should all just rub their bellies together. It's going to be so great. The body positivity. That's what I hope. I hope that this is spun as a body positivity thing. Why can't we look past things? And also, by the way, if you have two women, if it's two women and three fat guys running on either side, right, in the finalists, then nobody's going to be doing the body shaming. Because on the women's side, it's going to be, well, look at the record. Don't worry about what dress they're wearing and whether or not their eyes look droopy. You wouldn't do that to a man. And then on the other end, they're going to be like, yeah, by the way, don't mention body type or appearance because we're all kind of fat and we look like Dr. Robotnik. If we grew a mustache, we should be in a floating capsule chasing Sonic the Hedgehog. And all of it just, oh, God. I can only hope that this is as good, easily the best. I've been doing a lot of research for this card game that me and Teasdale are going to do. But I just have become fascinated with the 1992 election. I'm going to do a whole thing about the 1992 election. It's going to be fucking great. You guys are all going to realize how amazing the 1992 election was. And there's nothing you can do to stop me. So if you don't want to hear about the 1992 election, then pull your patrons. Pull your money away because I'm going full bore. I might do a 7-part series on the 1992 election. I'm so excited. Man, I'm all right. Okay, we have a thing about cereal, and that is coming up right now. Thank you. This is More Bullshit Conversation About Cereal from
Justin Robert Young.
Before we begin, let me tell you that this is a story about stories, about how the world is versus how we prefer to look at it. I got an email 2 weeks ago from Maren Davies. She's from Australia. She had a very strong reaction to my criticism of the podcast Serial. Why? Because in 2004, her friend was murdered. It was a very public case, and she had to suffer through not only her own feelings, but also the interest in the case itself. More on that in a second. First, an update on my criticism of Serial. Since our last show, Jay, one of the principals in the story of Adnan Syed, was interviewed by The Intercept. He reiterated much of what he said to the cops, but filled in more details, many contradictory to other versions of his story. He explained his shifting opinion by noting his discomfort and distrust of police. This led to Rabia Chaudhry, one of the key players in the Serial podcast, retweeting a picture I posted of Kermit the Frog drinking Lipton's iced tea. But that's a story for another day. Back to Maren. Here's her email. I could go into the story from my perspective. Let me know if you want tales of Sydney detectives having no idea how to talk to an upset and sarcastic then 16-year-old girl. But the thing that really got me was the irritating media coverage. She was gothic, did Tim Burton-esque art. And when she wasn't doing her Disney work, she got engaged to a dude she met on the internet. The scandal. In 2004, this was totally the case, not so much now. Years later, her lunatic ex-boyfriend, my personal bias showing here, is convicted thanks to overwhelming evidence against him, and the reenactment TV show is announced. I was never a fan of the genre beforehand, but now I just wanted to avoid it at all costs. Being reminded of the time, how much pain her family went through, memories of the funeral. That's the email. Her friend was Lindsay Van Blanken. If you Google Lindsay Van Blanken murder, you'll find tons of information about it. Here's one of the top results, just so you get a taste of how big it was.
Enraged by jealousy, he brutally strangled his former girlfriend, Lindsay Van Blanken, then hid her body in a sports bag. The gruesome crime would horrify the nation.
The entire story is just an absolute...
Pretty raw. Right? Notice the dramatic pacing of that clip. The music. This is a story. It's not an investigation. It's not a race to find the truth. It's a grisly tale of a murderer. Maren doesn't want to deal with it then and probably doesn't want to deal with it now. But at least beyond the Darklands, where I took that clip, wore its murder porn tag proudly. And it's what troubles me about Serial, or at least the fandom around it. Serial is not an investigation. It's the story of an investigation. I don't doubt that a ton of work went into it, but the hallmarks of the medium are clear. It's why the narration is so mannered. It's why we artfully fade into music breaks.
Blooded killer, and his secret lies in his past.
But at the end, these are real lives. These are real people. Including Sarah Koenig, by the way. The position she found herself in is unenviable. Part of the podcast's appeal was her vulnerability, her waffling understanding of the facts. As if any episode might produce a blockbuster piece of information that blew everything wide open. It's her story. If it were an advocacy podcast for Adnan, then why is it ending? So what now? And by the way, forget any grand pronouncements on if the show is good or bad, since none of us really know what the fuck No, fuck all about the facts beyond what some lady on a podcast told us. And believe me, I do podcasts. They're bullshit. We were entertained by it, and that's the only thing it promised us. And it delivered on it. But that also means we're not detectives. And the more we pry into this case, beyond the understanding of our own sympathies for the principals, the more harm we're likely to do on either side. Real life is fucked up. And at its most fucked up, it's often its most compelling. So even if we're tourists to the pain of people like Marin, it's our responsibility to leave them as close to how we found them as possible. Otherwise, well, we're just dicks. Get your emails on this podcast. It is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. That is justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Put jury in the subject line if you would like for me to talk about whatever you would like to talk about. It is my favorite part of the show, and we're going to play our new email jingle. Paul writes, I have a question about journalism. If memory serves, you went to Syracuse and worked for several newspapers of good refute before leaving the business. And by the business, I mean the industry. And by that reference, I appreciate the Tony Kornheiser. And becoming the multimedia mogul you are today. Presumably, journalism is something you wanted to get into and for which you had a passion. So how did you make a break from it? Was it a struggle for you, or were you able to make a clean break? I ask because I find myself facing a similar decision, albeit being somewhat deeper. I'm 33 and I've been in newspaper since I got out of high school. It's all I wanted to do since junior high. I like to think I've done okay for myself. Newspapers aren't getting any healthier. And trying to stick it out would seem to bring with it several unpalatable knockoff effects, not the least of which would be financial insecurity, making it difficult to buy a home, start a family, or save for retirement. Then again, what it's worth to have a demanding, engaging career that suits your particular talents. Paul, yeah, I mean, my backstory is I worked at a paper in Syracuse. You know, I'm allowed to say that I worked at the Morning Call of Allentown, Pennsylvania, and the Sun Sentinel of Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Now, other people might say that they interned at papers, and I certainly worked there during the summer when I wasn't going to school. But I didn't intern there because I was never part of an internship program. I never got accepted to one, and so I had to hustle my own jobs at these papers. So I was an actual employee that got actual paychecks, albeit for smaller windows than other people do stuff. But, I mean, I got with the Morning Call, I got stories on the front page, which was pretty rad. So how did I stop doing journalism? Well, this is probably a story for that I could go into a lot more detail on. But the short version is that I wanted to do comedy. So I decided to move and get a Joe job in New York City with a couple friends of mine that did comedy with me. And I wanted to try that out. I guess in my head, I just kind of figured that if shit went sideways, I would always get back to journalism. I had friends who wound up working at papers that I could have gotten jobs at, but, you know, it just, life brought me another way. I just kept finding things that I like to do more than go to newspapers. But then again, if all this falls to shit, I'll probably be writing about, you know, people who break into cars in Utica, New York. Andrew writes, so last week, while bashing Slate and Mark Maron, Phil used the tired line about the Monkees not being a band. And I wrote this screed saying, nuh-uh, and also fuck you, Phil. But it was way too angry, so now it's gone. Instead, I bring you this positive message. Despite starting as a manufactured product, the members of the Monkees took control of their music and indeed their own destiny. My wish for myself and anyone who hears this is that if we are ever faced with an even remotely similar situation, we have the fortitude to follow by their example. Love the show as always, Andrew. P.S. The song The Last Train to Clarksville is about a guy who wants to bang his girlfriend one last time before he leaves for the Vietnam War. And I think we can all agree that's a pretty rad thing that we can get behind. Or at least hopefully he did before he went to Vietnam. Which makes me so happy that people are caping up for the Monkees and fucking lighting up other motherfuckers on this show. This is so great. Alex writes, I just got back from AAW's Twisted Christmas wrestling show in Berwyn, Illinois. The Uha Nation match is where the story of the night begins. My takeaway of the show is that there were a handful of black wrestlers on the card, more than I'd ever seen at a wrestling event, and it goes without saying that they all put on a great show. As well, I was surprised at the diversity within the audience. But as the show went on, a few key fans got more drunk. They would mockingly start a New Day chant whenever there was a black wrestler in the ring. Now, we can all agree that the WWE's New Day gimmick is dumb and probably racist. But when's the line when it comes to ironically lumping these up-and-coming wrestlers in with corporate garbage? It got bad enough that the show ended with the AAW champion Eddie Kingston taking the announcer's mic and saying, enough with the New Day shit, everybody go home. So I'm curious about your perspective on racism in the current state of pro wrestling and in a broader sense and the trend of making fun of racism ironically because our society is quote unquote post-racial now. Also, who's your favorite wrestler? My favorite wrestler of all time is Mick Foley. This is a very interesting an interesting topic because number one, if there's one thing that you can say that's very awesome about people chanting New Day at black wrestlers is that they are not chanting the Nation of Domination at black wrestlers anymore. So at least there's progress. He said, winking, knowing that that was more of an insult than it was an insight. However, I recommend highly if anybody has not read, if you are into professional wrestling and you haven't read The Squared Circle by Davis Shoemaker, then go ahead, or David Shoemaker, I forget. I know it's a joke on the Cheap Heat podcast. David Shoemaker, I believe. Go ahead and read it. There is an article on a chapter on race that I think spells everything out very well and talks about the troubling elements of professional wrestling in terms of racism and, you know, the fact that pro wrestling was pretty much the only place where a black guy could beat up a racist white guy in the Jim Crow era South and have 30,000 people cheer for him. That is the weird carny business that professional wrestling is, and it will never shed that. As for shitty crowds, I mean, what are you going to do? If you are troubled by how fucked up that was, then imagine what it was like for all of those guys in the ring to deal with shitty crowds on a very regular basis when they were the only black guy on the card. It is just a window into very troubling elements of our society, in my opinion. All right. You can find this podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and some other shit. You can email me at justinrobertyoung@gmail.com. Remember to put jury in the subject line. That is J-U-R-Y. Twitter and Instagram is Justin R. Young. Also, Snapchat, too. I've been digging me some fucking Snapchat in a major way over the last week or so. I actually just figured out how to use it, which is rad. Also, patreon.com/jury, J-U-R-Y. We are currently over $110, and we march. We march onward. If you guys want to support it, then support it. Thank you to everybody who did. Hashtag join the conversation at diamondclub.reddit.com. And ladies and gentlemen, should you find yourself in your darkest hour, between now and the next time I talk to you, do yourself a favor and remember, please don't die! You think you have had enough?
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.